Brenda," she had said, looking at her with those goggle eyes of hers, "I want you to consider carefully, because it's a big responsibility." Everything had felt strange. The sick sensation in her stomach and the burning in her mouth from the alcohol, and the fact that she was not wearing her nurse's uniform but the pink wool costume she had bought specially to go away in. Her going away suit, as if she was getting married, when instead of a honeymoon she would have a week of taking care of this baby, and not a hint of a husband. "You're a good girl, Brenda," Matron had said, putting on a smile that was worse than one of her glares. "May God go with you." She would need his company, all right, she thought mournfully now. There was tonight on the boat, then the train journey tomorrow to Southampton, and then 5 more days at sea. And then what? She'd never been out of the country before, except once, when she was little and her father took the family on a day trip to the Isle of Man. A sleek black motor car was edging its way through the crowds of passengers going toward the boat. It stopped when it was still a good 10 yards away from her, and a woman got out at the passenger side with a canvas bag in her hand and a bundle in a blanket in the crook of her other arm. She was not young, 60 if she was a day, but was dressed as if she were half that, in a grey suit with a narrow calf-length skirt belted tightly at the waist, her little pot belly sticking out under the belt, and a pillbox hat with a bit of blue veil that came down below her nose. She walked forward over the flagstones, unsteady in stiletto heels, her painted-on mouth pursed in a smile. Her eyes were small and black and sharp. "Miss Rutledge," she said. "My name is Moran." Her fancy accent was as fake as everything else about her. She handed over the bag. "The baby's things are in there, with her papers. Give them to the purser when you get on board at Southampton. He'll know who you are." She examined Brenda closely, making slits of her little black eyes. "Are you all right? You look pale." Brenda said she was fine, that she'd been up late, that was all. Miss Moran, or Mrs., or whatever she was, smiled thinly. "The parting glass, eh?" She held out the bundle and the blanket. "Here you are, don't drop it." She laughed shortly, then frowned at herself and said, "Sorry." What struck Brenda first about the bundle was the heat. It might have been a lump of burning coal that was wrapped in the blanket, except that it was soft and that it moved. When she held it against her breast, something in her insides flipped like a fish. "Oh," she said, a weak gasp of surprise and happy dismay. The woman was speaking to her again, but she wasn't listening. From deep down in the folds of the blanket, a tiny, filmy eye was regarding her with what seemed an expression of dispassionate interest. Her throat thickened, and she was afraid the morning's waterworks might start up again. "Thank you," she said. It was all she could think to say, although she wasn't sure who it was she was thanking, or for what. The Moran woman shrugged, pulling her mouth up at one side in a sketch of a smile. "Good luck," she said. She walked back rapidly to the car, her high heels clicking, and got in and pulled the door shut. "Well, that's done," she said. And through the windscreen, she watched Brenda Rutledge, still standing where she had left her on the dock, gazing into the opening in the blanket, the canvas bag forgotten at her feet. "Look at her," she said sourly. "Think she's the Blessed Virgin." The driver made no comment, only started up the car. Part 1, Chapter 1. It was not the dead that seemed to quirk uncanny, but the living. When he walked into the morgue long after midnight and saw Malachi Griffin there, he felt a shiver along his spine that was to prove prophetic, a tremor of troubles to come. Mal was in Quirk's office, sitting at the desk. Quirk stopped in the unlit body room, among the shrouded forms on their trolleys, and watched him through the open doorway. He was seated with his back to the door, leaning forward intently in his steel-framed spectacles, the desk lamp lighting the left side of his face and making an angry pink glow through the shell of his ear. He had a file open on the desk before him and was writing in it with peculiar awkwardness. This would have struck Quirk as stranger than it did, if he hadn't been drunk. The scene sparked a memory in him from their school days together, startlingly clear, of Mal, intent like this, sitting at a desk among 50 other earnest students in a big hushed hall, as he laboriously composed an examination essay, with a beam of sunlight falling slantways on him from a window somewhere high above. A quarter of a century later, he still had that smooth seal's head of oiled black hair,